We're Kim
and Kendra,
two faithful skeptics who find Christ calling us
to ask all kinds of questions. Join us for our podcast,
Hold On,
Is That Really Christian? Hi, everyone. I'm back with Kim, and today we want to have a conversation about abortion, especially in light of the Old Testament, or what's also known as the Hebrew Bible. I use those two terms interchangeably, and part of this, I think, is something that Kim has brought to attention, and I think is a very helpful thing for us to remember, which is that the Hebrew Bible is not our first text. In other words, the Hebrew Bible is the primary text for our Jewish siblings. And so when we are dealing with or trying to interpret the Hebrew Bible as Christians, it calls us to have a special place of being cautious about our own interpretation. Would you say that's kind of true for you, Kim?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really interesting to think about how the Jewish tradition is very much about conversation. And so all the things that are in what we call our Old Testament are issues that have been discussed for centuries by Jewish people. I actually had someone tell me, who is from that tradition, that if you get two Jews together, you'll get three opinions. I mean, that's how proud they are of the kind of conversations and debates that go back and forth between them. So we have to respect the fact that when we try to interpret this, I think sometimes we just want to go, I'm going to pick and choose two or three little things, and that's going to be the basis for whatever my belief is, or especially around this issue. And unfortunately, when we do that, we don't look holistically. We don't see some more problematic things that they have already argued over.
Right.
And it can really be, I think, doing a disservice and disrespect to the text itself and to the tradition that it came out of.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so our question today is, you know, what does the Hebrew Bible say about abortion? And so I want to say kind of to start that it doesn't say anything. And then still, let's continue to dial down, though, because there have been some places in the Hebrew Bible that people have pointed to make an argument against abortion. But before we kind of delve into those places, I just also want to say just kind of as a secondary note of caution, in addition to what we've already said about recognizing the Jewish perspective here, that the Bible is not an encyclopedia, and it was not designed for us to take a topic and decide to investigate that particular topic isolated from anything else. So it doesn't work that way. It's not like a big dictionary of sorts. And so I think we're doing the Bible a disservice if we treat it that way. And so I think that's always important. And likewise, it's not a set of rules that are intended to be followed because it's a set of rules. I think that it's helpful for us to think of the Bible as a tool to be used in our relationship with God and with others, and that it invites us into a relationship as opposed to these other things of it being a set of rules or an encyclopedia. So kind of keeping that in mind, then there are, Kim, at least, shall we say, like four or five places in the Hebrew Bible that people have kind of pointed to make some sort of an argument against abortion. One is Psalm 139:13. I'm pretty sure you've heard this one.
I have.
It says, "For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb." This obviously comes from the book of Psalms, so that means it's poetry. Mm-hmm. And you can hear that poetry even in these two lines, because it's this kind of reflection. You who formed my inward parts, you knit me together in my mother's womb. It's a metaphor, a way of saying something twice to kind of provide some emphasis to it. But it's not a science book. It's poetry. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this way, this symbol to say that God is part of our entire lives, that our entire lives are lived within the presence of God. It's not intended to kind of scientifically explain how it is that God is kind of working in a mother's womb. Mm-hmm. Another verse that is often used is Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. And this verse says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations." And again, I think we're doing a disservice to this text if we try to use that to say anything about what is going on in a womb. This is about a calling on the prophet Jeremiah. The idea that from the very beginning he was being called into this particular role. And so to take an individual calling experience and try to in some way suggest that says anything about abortion, I think, is not taking that text seriously. And we have something like that also in the book of Isaiah, in chapter 44, verse 24, where it says, "I am the Lord, your Redeemer, who formed you in the womb." And sometimes people want to use this in the same way that they do want to try to use Jeremiah. And here, it's even further afield, because what's being referenced here is Israel. So this is not about a person, but is actually about Israel as a people. So all those are just kind of cautions to say that's not at all what's going on there.
I'm interested, too, in what you may say about a couple of the verses that have to go along with those. In other words, I think you're absolutely right that they have other meanings, and we often, I would say, are very play fast and loose with Scripture sometimes by not reading the entire thing.
Right.
So there are a couple of verses that begin to talk about and actually do have an impact on some of the discussions within Judaism, as I understand it, so that when we're not holistic in our thinking and we just pluck those three verses out, one is the issue with context, but then the whole concept of breath, and breath being poetic and symbolic, but that has right. had in some my understanding, it has had a way of their thinking about within Judaism that life begins with breath and it ends with breath, and it actually, from some of the discussions and some of their, I guess, some of the writings have really seized upon that as an important point. So if you're going to take the Isaiah, the Jeremiah, the Psalms, what is Psalms? You read Psalms holistically, you can find some things that are really troubling there, because it has to do with, you know, a people under duress.
Right.
And this tendency to want to possibly be vengeful based on what has happened horribly to them.
Right.
So that verse that I'm referring to is 137:9 of the Psalm. And it says, "Happy is the one who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks." So this is what I'm talking about, learning context and understanding that that's a cry of a people who are under a great deal of duress, and this tendency toward wanting vengeance because that's what's happened to them is how we need to understand that. But it is there, so our picking and choosing and not looking at context is really a problem, and
so,
we should do that.
Yeah, so just because it's there doesn't mean that it's there to be instruction to be put in place.
Exactly.
To be in action. And then, so I think what you're saying is that we can't take isolated verses and pull them out and take them as calls to action.
Right.
Right.
And then I did want to talk about, just briefly, about the idea of life beginning with breath, which comes from Genesis 2. And that is the story of Adam. Adam is formed. Some people say, well, he wasn't formed in a womb, but he was formed just in the same way as described within the three verses that Kendra just talked about. But that also the breath of God is breathed into the nostrils of Adam. And there's ways to look at that metaphorically, who Adam is. And
right.
There's also ways that if people want to be literal about it, again, it doesn't lend itself to the kind of argument that life begins at conception or heartbeat. You know, there's just nothing biblical there that tells you that. But we don't have to say it begins at breath either, because we know a lot more now, because science can tell us a lot that
sure.
can help us decide.
Yeah, that's right, Kim. But we also, this is a good place, I think, to illustrate how the Bible isn't intended to be a science book, because you have two creation accounts mm-hmm. slapped right up next against each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you have one, and then it goes right into a second one, and there are different ways in which creation occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think someone would be very hard pressed to say that then creation occurs in exactly one of those ways and not the other, mm-hmm. or even to say that the people who put that together intended it to be words about how something happened as opposed to why,
mm-hmm.
Because they wouldn't have put those things that were clearly contradictory right up against each other if they thought that we would get mired down in those contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we should be recognizing that they're put there to help us ask the question of why.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we here? What are we about?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm glad you brought it up just as kind of a way to demonstrate that, right, this is not intended to be science.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not try to make it something that it's not.
Right.
That kind of takes me then to, I think, Kim, I wanted to just briefly mention Exodus chapter 21, because people will sometimes kind of point to this part to kind of make an argument. So I'm guessing that our listeners don't know this one by heart. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure you don't either. I certainly don't. So let me just indulge, if you'll just indulge me and let me read it,
mm-hmm.
and that way we can be on the same page.
Sure.
So it's in verses 22 through 25, which says, "When people who are fighting injure a pregnant woman so that there is a miscarriage, and yet no further harm follows, the one responsible shall be fined what the woman's husband demands. If any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe."
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much about this, but just to point out that we do have at least some complexity that is presented here, in that you have a woman, possibility of a woman who miscarries.
Mm-hmm.
So what this says is that if a pregnant woman is harmed so that there is a miscarriage,
mm-hmm.
so that's the first thing. So a miscarriage occurs, what happens? Well, this stipulates that the woman's husband would make a demand on what should be paid, and that mm-hmm. should be what is paid. Why why would it be the woman's husband who makes this determination?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because in that context, women were seen as property. And so this woman and what she was carrying, the potential baby that she was carrying, was the husband's property.
Right.
So that's why he gets to determine what that was worth.
Right.
Right? But then the second possible situation is that there is a miscarriage and further harm follows. In other words, then the woman dies as well. And then in that case, it's the law of retaliation that is put into play. And I think that at least from a kind of just a reasonable reading of the text that we've just done, we can see that the fetus that the woman was carrying was worth less than the woman.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is important, even though we can really wrestle over some of the ideas of property or whatever. But some people try to parse out what is harm, who's harmed, and it seems pretty clear to me it's not the fetus or the embryo or whatever. It is the it could be anything. It could be, you know, another person harmed. It could be the harm to the woman who is carrying the baby. And but when some people try to get into this idea of, well, it was at this stage or whatever, one, we don't have that. Miscarriage is, this is, there's two translations of the Bible in which miscarriage is used. Some people don't like that, but frankly, the one you quoted from is one that tries to be very adhere very well to the as best they can to translation. There's a trick sometimes in translations themselves. But the NIV, which a lot of people know, the New Internationalist Version and the New Revised Standard Versions, which are some of the bigger translations, they both say miscarriage. But I did want to say that it doesn't make sense if it is anything else. In other words, if they're saying, well, it's at a certain stage, it would be, because then you're saying, and we could get into whole Hammurabi's code about the fact that was actually an improvement of like your whole arm for a finger, you know. I mean, in other words, that was supposed to be a better way to do things, is that if you do something to somebody's finger, then you lose a finger. But if you're thinking about a pregnant woman at any stage, that what are you going to do? Is the person who caused the harm going to have his wife get pregnant and then for you? You know, it just doesn't make any sense if it's anything other than a human being who is not in a womb.
Yeah, and then also just to point out that this isn't what we're actually talking about. This is not an abortion.
Right.
And so, again, this is kind of the closest thing that people want to point to mm-hmm. try to make some determination about what the Bible says about it. And so I just want to reiterate that this is one of those places where at least the idea of miscarriage comes up. But again, it's not abortion.
Right. Well, I mean, technically, a spontaneous abortion is a miscarriage. It's the same thing. But it's not abortion in the way people...
It's not an intentional.
Right. Yeah. And I just wanted to briefly, without going further into this, other than the fact that a lot of women, people going to abortion clinics encounter people standing out in the parking lot or on the streets haranguing them. And what they often hear is, well, it says thou shalt not kill, or better translation, my understanding, is thou shalt not murder. And they want to mm-hmm. accuse them of murdering because they end up terminating a pregnancy. And that is where I think it's really important to say there is a lot more with that line in Exodus should give us pause to think about whether or not thou shalt not kill or murder has something to do with terminating a pregnancy. And I think within the Jewish tradition, they do not believe that to be true. And I think just raising some of the issues that we're trying to do today without confusing anyone mm-hmm. is to say there's just more there. And please stop using that on people, because one is you don't know their circumstances or their lives And so it's important for us not to use that kind of language when it seems pretty clear to me, and I think within the Jewish tradition they would say, that does not fit under thou shalt not kill.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Kim. That's good for us to keep in mind. The other thing I just kind of wanted to mention, too, is that as a Christian, for me, when I look at a text in the Hebrew Bible, then I always want to bring it back to how does what I am learning and trusting about the life of Jesus help me to think about this? And so when I also then kind of step back from this particular text in Exodus and think about, so what do I trust and what do I know about the life of Jesus that helps me? I think it is that Jesus, I think, calls us to liberation on behalf of everyone. And I've even kind of more recently been thinking, you know, there is an episode that Jesus has with the woman who was bleeding for 12 years, right?
Right.
And she has heard something about him that moved her enough that she wanted to go find him. And that strikes me as maybe having a little something to say about women and their own autonomy with regard to their body. Because as a woman who's bleeding, when she reaches out and touches Jesus' garment, she then is making him ritually unclean by doing that. And yet, he not only responds positively to her, he calls her daughter. He calls her by a familial name, recognizing her, and says, "Your faith has made you well."
Mm-hmm.
And so I see that as a liberating action with this particular woman, and that helps me then to also think about this particular verse in Exodus. I'm sure we haven't answered all the questions, and in fact, we haven't even talked about all the places that maybe we thought we were going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe this is enough to encourage our listeners to keep asking questions.
Right. And that, of course, is the purpose of what we're doing here, is to try to get us thinking. Because, you know, as it says, does not say in the Bible, use the brain that God gave you, but my mother said that, and so, therefore, I think that's wise.
That's great. We'll talk again later.
Okay.
We'd love to hear from you. Please contact us at podcast@northhaven.org. Thanks for joining our conversation. We hope you'll join us next time.
We thank North Haven Church in Dallas for sponsoring us, Larry McCain for music, and Chris Pauley for technical assistance.
If you'd like to know more about our sponsor, go to northhaven.org. That's Northhaven with one H. And on our website, you can find more information on our ministries of faith, mercy, and justice.